Don't let the cold water fool you. The surfing can be great in Maine. When there's a big storm approaching in Maine, some people drive to the grocery store and stock up on staples. Others make sure there's gas in the generator. And some, well, they head for the shore. Because a nor'easter can mean big waves and great surfing conditions. Who cares if it's freezing outside? That's what wetsuits are for. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we will learn more about surfing in Maine. What are the best spots? How do you get started? Is it hard? Is it dangerous? Even though Hawaii, Australia, and Malibu may get all the attention in the movies and popular culture, insiders know that Maine rocks its own surf culture. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It takes a certain type of person to wade into the cold Maine waters in search of the perfect wave. Today, we have three of those people in the studio to talk about their love of surfing, how to get started in the sport, and where some of the great places are to surf off of Maine's coast. Joining me in our studio, Vic Brazen. He is the owner of Wheels and Waves and is a longtime surf, snowboard, and skateboard photographer. Charlie Fox is owner of the Maine Surf Shop, Maine Surfers Union. And Owen Manahan is a high schooler in Kennebunk and surfer since he was 10 years old. He is also our Maine Calling intern right now. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a surfer? If so, where do you surf? If you aren't, have you ever thought about it but maybe been a little frightened? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here. Charlie, I'm going to start with you and find out, how did you get into surfing? Did you grow up in Maine?
Yeah, I did grow up in Maine. I grew up in pretty much Cumberland, Falmouth area.
Did you surf as a kid?
I started surfing when I was 15. A couple of my other friends were started surfing and thought it was fun. I grew up sailing, and it was kind of another way to get in the water and enjoy it. And then didn't really take off for me until I went to college my freshman year, and my roommate was from New Jersey and was going to school down in Connecticut, and we go out to this place called Point Judith on big hurricanes and really got into surfing then and just grew from there.
So when you were 15 and you started surfing in Maine, was it the thing it is now? Were there as many people out there on a February day surfing?
No, there wasn't many people out there, and the wetsuits weren't as warm either.
Okay. Vic, your turn. When did you start? And did you grow up in Maine, and when did you start surfing?
No, I grew up in, well, inner city Pennsylvania, so...
Not surf country.
But, I had a skateboard, snowboard background, so anytime I was at the beach, I would do it. But I really, really got into it, you know, in my late 20s, and then I ended up buying the surf shop, so then I really, really got into it. So
owning a surf shop, how often do you get to surf? I mean, isn't that one of the quandaries that happens?
I think it's probably with any industry that it's a big misconception that you think that the guys, well, we do, but we work too. So a lot of times when it's good, we're stuck working and we sit there all day hearing about how great it is. But we get our time for sure, no question.
Okay, Owen, what about you?
Yeah, so I was about 10, and my dad got me this big, soft red board, and it was just a total junker. And it was about then that I started giving it a try. But it wasn't until about age 14 when I really started going out a lot when the waves were good. And then, you know, 16, 17 started going all the time and getting more into it. So I'm out there whenever there's waves now.
Okay, how often is that?
It really depends. It depends on the season. In the summer, pretty seldom. The waves get, you know, above like knee high to even a decent range where it's fun to go surf. Maybe, I don't know, 10 times per summer. It doesn't get great. But during hurricane season and, you know, just during the fall and the winter, it's good.
Yeah, I've heard that, Charlie. I've heard that winter and hurricane season is prime time. Summer is not surf time.
Yeah, it's I kind of explain it to everybody when they come out of shop. They're like, you guys are crazy for surfing in the winter. And it's like, yeah, when everybody's running to the mountains to go chase a powder, we're kind of going to the ocean to chase the waves. They definitely get more powerful in the winter, but it's also, it's definitely more a mental process going into it, because if you're new to it, you don't really know what's going on with the cold and all that stuff. But when you've been doing it for a long time, you really understand going in, you're like, already, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be cold, and you got to prepare yourself.
So, Vic, tell me, you've owned your store for 18 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How has the scene changed in those 18 years? Are there more people surfing now? Are they the same kind of people, different kind of people?
Sure, yeah, far, far more. Just far more people just in general in the, in Maine, coming to Maine. And I think, like, for our area, the Canadians just kind of got into surfing in the last 20 years, and it's like Malibu in the 60s. They're all just discovering it, so they come down in big packs. And, you know, for myself and Charlie, it's maybe not everybody's thrilled that there's so many Canadians here, but, there are a lot of them that come down. And, there's just an awful lot more people now than when we started, for sure.
Yeah, okay. I was out this winter on a very average day, and certainly nothing to drive 6 hours for. And I saw this guy, and he looked like a total ripper. And
okay, what's a total ripper,
Owen? Really, so someone who's really good on the surfboard. They can do good turns and catch a lot of waves. That'd be a ripper. And they also have the macho that goes along with it. And I said, hey, how's it going? Because, just to be friendly in the water. And the guy, he said, like, hello with a French accent. And so I realized he's from Canada, and he drove down from Montreal just for that day and would drive home, and that's not completely unusual.
That's interesting. I knew people surfed in Maine, and I thought it was because, well, I live in Maine, and this is where the water is, but I'd rather be surfing someplace like Malibu or Santa Cruz or Australia, but really, we're a destination for some people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I think in the past couple of years, at least 3-4 years, it's definitely grown. We got a lot more people coming up here and surfing. And I think it has to have to do with, like, social media now. It's just social media has exploded, and we can put photos up and post photos of different spots and surfing and stuff, and people will come up and want to surf our waves. And it's kind of interesting. Cold water surfing has all of a sudden become this fad now. Like, yeah. Tropical surfing is not in. It's now cold water surfing. And you'll see a lot of ambassadors like Anna Argett or other people going to places that are cold and surfing in cold water conditions.
So why is it? Is it because it's so much better, or you're just like that much tougher if you do cold water surfing?
I think it's just something different that a lot of the guys, like, we see so many more pros coming through here now than we did even 10 years ago. And I think, like you said, it's a lot because of social media, Instagram. And there's a few places they all want their picture at. I'm not going to say the names of the places, but they all want their picture in front of this, big wall with the barrel in it, or this place. So, they see this, and then they see somebody getting a good photo, or they see a good video, and then they want that too. So, yeah, it is a destination, and it's just something unique that a lot of them don't get to do normally because they're from tropical places.
Okay, so where are the best places in Maine to surf? It depends on the storm, right?
It depends, and that's a bit of a tricky question because every surfer's got their own little area. And as Vic kind of said earlier, with the increased populations of people surfing, it gets a little frustrating because there's only a finite amount of waves and only oftentimes at one takeoff point or so. And so it can get pretty frustrating and difficult and even more dangerous if there are a bunch of people out in the water. And even in my lifetime, I've seen it get more crowded, which has been a bit frustrating. So to totally give away all of the secret spots is unlikely.
Okay, so don't give me secret spots. Where are the better known spots?
Yeah, so I live in Kennebunk, and there's a beach there, and that's definitely my go-to. It's close to my house and gets good enough waves.
Okay, well, which beach? There are more than one beach.
Gooch's Beach.
Yeah. Gooch's Beach. Okay, what do you guys what do you recommend if someone comes into the shop and hasn't surfed in Maine before? What's a great place to get started?
Yeah, I say Higgins Beach. It's the closest to Portland here right now. So it's like 15-20 minute drive there. They have a bathhouse, showers, friendly for all families. Not usually if you're going there with a couple or a husband and wife and a kid, it's not everybody's going to be surfing. So it's a great spot to, like, you can hang on the beach and be safe. And then Scarborough State Park is the same deal. It's like, you know, it's a full family friendly spot that people can go hang out, surf, and have fun at.
And Higgins and Scarborough don't have the rocks that some other places have.
They do have rocks there, so definitely be aware. There's a big rock in the middle of Higgins Beach that a lot of people end up every once in a while. And then there's definitely rocks off to your far right-hand side of Higgins Beach. And then Scarborough, the far, far left of the beach is rocks. But it's mostly sand, yes, and it's a lot safer. But at the same time, you want to go in with your own ability and be safe.
Okay, Vic, your turn.
It's a touchy area because people get very upset if you're telling people to go surf where they surf all the time.
Yeah. Kind of like fishermen that way, right?
Absolutely, 100%. And the way I feel about it is, if you could sit in a public parking lot and see the wave from your car, it's not a secret spot. So, you know, there's plenty of places like where the guys have mentioned. I think Wells Beach is a good place to learn just because there's no rocks. It's a big beach break. And there's a very wide area, so if it's crowded here, you could walk down the beach a little. But, most of the coast on the right day will produce waves. It's all about the wind direction and swell direction. So, like Owen said earlier, it's kind of a loaded question because the best place today could be a completely different place tomorrow.
Well, yeah, with definitely. The advent of all the information on the internet, it's way easier, isn't it, than it used to be to figure out in any given day, in any kind of circumstance, where's a great place to go.
Yeah, it is, but Maine's a challenging place. Our weather is very challenging here. A lot of times our weathermen and women can't even get our weather correct, and a lot of times we say walk outside and give it 30 minutes. You know, it's going to change. So that's the same with our coastline and our coastline is so jagged and moving in and out. Our tides are so big and we have a lot of negative tides and a lot of massive plus tides. So you kind of have to be your own weather person and do your own reporting. Like when I do forecasting for myself to see if there's going to be waves and surf, I look at like four different apps and weather and stuff. I don't just follow like one thing and be like, oh, it's going to be good. Because what it could be good down in Kennebunk, it could be nothing up here. And what it could be where he is, it could be nothing here. It's totally different. So you have to spend time and educate yourself at every little spot. And every little spot will handle different wind and different conditions. So you have to really dive in. It's not like I used to live in California. And it's not like out there where you're like, oh, south swell, we're going to go here. It's easy. It's you really have to educate yourself and go for it.
So I'm going to get into the philosophy of surfing a little bit here. I understand it's a lifestyle for many people. It's more than just sort of an activity I like to do. And Owen, you've written a poem.
Yeah, I have. So here it is. Mysterious and old as the earth itself, vast and wide, far out of reach, monolithic and uniform, but quite unique. The sea slowly smooth, waves to sleep, from distance traversed, quietly discreet, arriving on shore only to disperse. Energy transferred organically, the cycle churns continuously, no stopping or starting what goes on, the process sustains long after we're gone. Tranquil or wild, calm or not, never the same, each day new. Off of land, off of feet, harnessing energy underneath. Truly luck at the ocean's dismiss, out of control, seemingly remiss. To be in the vast escape, cloaked by a fluid cape, instills a peaceful state. Dropping tide and setting sun, the shifting sand where the fish do run. Away from phones, away from busy, a natural and connecting remedy. Out at sea is where I will be.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And really, to me, what I'm thinking is that you get a relationship with the ocean.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you really do get a nice relationship with the ocean. It's different for everyone. You know, there could be even some slightly traumatic event where there's this one spot that I see, and I had a bad wipeout there one time. And so when I see it, I always think of that. And so everyone's got a different relationship with it.
Okay, you guys want to follow up? What does it mean to you?
I think most surfers will tell you could be having a terrible day all day long, and you could go out and get on your board and paddle out, and it's gone. You could go out there for a half hour, and you come back in, and you got a whole different clear mind. And I think, I think that's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a place of release. There's so many elements going on when you're surfing. You know, you're just balancing on your board, watching the waves, paying attention to people around you. It's just your mind releases. You have to release. It's not like any other sport I've ever done where you could be thinking about what's going on land and still doing a sport. When you're on the water, you have to be focusing the whole time. So everything just vanishes out of your brain, and you get out of the water and you have a euphoria that you're just like happy and feeling a lot better and everything. A lot of surfers will kind of call it their church. It's like, you know, they'll say they're going to church, and it's like more they're going out there to be happy and
Any of you have a good story or about, you know, encounters with wildlife or being in a special place that you didn't know you was going to do something to you or for you?
Yeah, you know, sometimes there's some wildlife you'll see out there. Some fish you might see swimming when the water's a bit clearer. Of course, all kinds of birds, especially in the summer. You'll see some seals every now and then, which is cool.
What do the seals think of surfers?
They're better at it than us.
Yeah. They always spook me too.
Yeah, for sure.
So I might be listening to this program thinking, boy, I want to try surfing. So is it, how good a shape do you have to be in? And what kind of prerequisites are there if you want to try to get up the courage?
You just have to know how to swim, really. I think that's like the big thing, is making sure you know how to swim. And you know, it depends on who you go with for surf instructors and stuff. A good surf instructor in a good surf school will take them out into the white water and be careful and be cautious with them and teach them surfing etiquette on land and tell them about currents and all the stuff and making sure that the person's educated enough when they go in so they kind of have understanding it. A lot of people attack surfing sort of like they'll attack going skiing or snowboarding. And the ocean is very powerful. And they'll learn the first time by wiping out or something like that. So, you know, a good surf instructor will help them out and teach them the right way of going out.
All right. Is there such a thing as too old to surf?
No, definitely not. We had a group come in a couple of years ago, and it was three generations, and the grandfather was in his 80s, and they all had a good time. It's, you know, it's about, like you said, it's about giving them good information, make them feel confident before they get out there, and then put them on the right equipment. It's really not that hard. It's, you know, there's boards big enough for anybody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to ask about different boards, and I also want to ask what it's like the first time you step into the ocean in February to go surfing. But we do have to take a break when we come back. Those questions plus comments and questions from the audience. Please join us. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, the white power and paramilitary movements in America. We talk with Kathleen Ballou about her new book, Bring the War Home, which traces these movements from the 70s through the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. She writes about their vision of a white state, their declarations of war against the government, and preparations for the apocalypse. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air later this evening at 7 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. Well, they call them smart speakers for a reason. Your Amazon Echo and Google Home know how to bring you both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. All you have to do is ask it to play Maine Public Radio or play Maine Public Classical Radio, and you'll hear us. That's pretty smart if you ask us. More information about how to use your smart speaker to hear Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical is online at mainepublic.org. Just scroll down and click on the box on our homepage.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all you need to know about surfing in Maine. Well, not all you need to know, but a whole bunch. Joining me today, Charlie Fox. He is the owner of the Maine Surf Shop, Maine Surfers Union. Vic Brazen is the owner of Wheels and Waves. And Owen Manahan is a high school student in Kennebunk and surfer since he was 10. He has also been our outstanding Maine Calling intern for the past school year. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to start with Gordon, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
Well, I just thought I'd give a little historical information about surfing in Maine. I'm just short of 70 by about 3 months, and I first started in 1959. My cousin Ben Hadsel had been living in Orange County, California, and he moved to Rhode Island, and he brought with him his Ole, O-L-E, board. It was one that Bob Olson had made at Sunset Beach. And he brought it up to the beach cottage that my parents had at Drake's Island. So I was about 10 years old, and he was 3 or 4 years older and had been surfing in California. And I thought he was crazy because I had never thought of surfing in the main waves. Not with that kind of board. We had used just a wooden plank that had been rounded at the top and had a cleat on it, and a wide pine plank, and had done kind of belly boarding like they do now with the boogie boards, but I never thought I could stand up. Anyway, he taught me to surf. He left the board. I used it all summer long, that summer and the next. And a bunch of guys at Drake's Island, you know, got into it and borrowed it. And Biff Clark and Doug Howard, the Hatch brothers, we all became quite good surfers. We went and bought boards. I bought one first in Long Island and brought it back in 1964.
Gordon, were you using wetsuits back then?
No wetsuits. Those came in later. So, you know, whatever the water was, it was the thrill of going out that kept you warm. But anyway, we ultimately became a part of Surfer Crow's competition team out of his Agunquit shop. Maybe some of the guys have heard about that.
Sure, anyway, I know Surfer Crow.
Anyway, so it was really something to drive. I had a 1958 Ford Country Squire wagon with Surf 2 license plates, and we would drive to places like Higgins Beach and take our boards out, and people would look at us like we were nuts until they saw that we could actually catch a wave and stand up in Maine. So anyway, it was a great time. I'll keep it short and just tell you my favorite place of all time is Onteo Point in the Agunquit River mouth when there's a hurricane surf. And I also surfed there in moonlight with Rusty Miller, who was a very, very famous, surfer.
Gordon, are you still surfing?
Oh, yeah. I have a 10-2 Hobie. Nice. The guys know what that is. And I have no leash on it. You lose the board, you swim in to get it off the beach.
Awesome. Oh, wow.
It's the way I learned, and I'll go to my grave surfing that way. So.
Well, Gordon, thanks so much for calling in. And that fun story leads to asking about boards. What is a 10-2 Hobie? Is that the length?
Yeah, it's 10 foot 2 inches. Okay. And the number that most people just say is the length. There's a couple numbers on the board that are kind of important, but the length is the most common one people talk about.
Okay, and is it that a wider board is better for beginners and a shorter board is better for rippers, as Owen says, or is it more sophisticated than that?
Yeah, so a wider board, yeah, it's definitely going to give you more stability and everything and stuff, but you also want to make sure it's not too wide so that you still can get your arms around and paddle it, So it's major. A lot of longboards, beginner stuff, is like 23 inches wide to 22 inches wide range. And then anywhere from 9'6" down to 8 foot would be the range for more of a beginner surfer.
I have an email from Jesse. Just want to take the opportunity to remind both beginners and longtime surfers to remember that we are out there to have fun. If you're just started, the absolute first thing you should learn is how to be safe and to lean and follow the internationally recognized right-of-way rules. Advanced surfers need to remember to give the beginners the benefit of the doubt and a kind tip or suggestion if you see them doing something wrong or dangerous. There is so much unnecessary friction, largely driven by ignorance and entitlement in this world, and it would be a shame to see that take over our fickle and cold surf paradise?
Yeah, so certainly there is, as she said, a lot of friction. And like Vic was saying earlier at Wells Beach, you know, there's oftentimes these little pockets where the waves are a little better, especially on a beach break, and little pockets where they're a little worse. And sometimes the beginners don't know better, and they'll start to drift into the better pockets where the local surfers are. And that can be really frustrating, especially if you've asked them, hey, can you give us a little space? Because like I said earlier, there's only so many waves you can catch and only so many points to take off from them. But yeah, certainly if they go into the areas where it's worse, there's still waves, but they're just not intruding on what you would say the locals.
And there's like, it's as much of a safety thing as agreed of I want to get all the waves thing. If the real rule that you need to know is don't drop in on people, because if somebody is already riding a wave and you think you can get it and you drop in, they're already on it. You're dropping literally right on top of them, and they crash. Like,
It's just like a car. You know, the rules of the road is just like you driving a car. You know, if you see someone blow through a red light, most likely they're going to get hit. Yeah. That's the same exact way as surfing. You know, you're driving down a road, you know, surfing and going down a wave, you don't want to get hit. And that's the same thing like Vic was touching on there. It's like paddling out. You know, if you see someone surfing down the face of a wave, don't try to paddle in front of them. Try to paddle towards the white water. Yes, the white water could flip you and throw you and stuff like that, but you're going to be more safe for yourself and the other surfers. So there's definitely a big, she's touching upon, there is definitely etiquette out there. And that's a big thing, like what Vic and I were talking about. It's like we want, when we teach people surfing, we want to make sure that people are learning surfing etiquette and understanding it and going in it. There is definitely, in any sport we do, there's definitely going to be some bad apples out there who don't care about the etiquette and they just think it's, you know, their domain. But, you know, everybody's got to enjoy because...
And there's probably people who just don't know, right?
Yes, is very true. And that's where just being polite, paddling up to them and letting them know. I've definitely done it plenty of times, paddle up to people and just let them know, you know, you may have been wrong and you could have gotten hurt there. And just do it nicely, obviously.
Well, and it's also, not only is there more people here, there's, you know, it used to be where if you wanted to go surfing, you came into a surf shop, bought a board, talked to a guy, somebody like me or Charlie. We'd tell you what was up, tell you what to do, what not to do. You go out there, there'd be a heck of a lot less friction.
Correct.
Now, you can buy a board on Craigslist. You can buy a board at Costco. Nobody's telling them, giving them any information. They sell paddle boards at hardware stores. So, you know, they're not getting any information. So they're just going out there. So you're seeing a lot of people who have no clue of what they're, you know. And it's not that they're jerks. They're just... Nobody told them because they bought it off Craigslist or they bought it at wherever.
Yeah, a message from Joseph emphasizing etiquette as well. Big deal in the surfing community. We're going to go to Martin from Bangor. Hi, Martin. Go ahead.
Hi there. I would like to say hello to your guest who learned to surf at Point Judith. That was my home break where I grew up in Rhode Island.
Nice.
I moved to Maine 31 years ago and have been surfing here ever since. And in 31 years, I've surfed two days without a wetsuit.
About right.
What I would say, if anybody really wants to learn to surf, I think it would be better if you can swing it to go to some warm place and learn there. Because, you know, learning that move, the essential move, the pop-up, that wetsuit's an impediment. And so if you can learn that move in a warm place, you know, if you can go to, I don't know, Costa Rica, where I was in Costa Rica last winter, and I got a surf instructor for 2 hours, a rental board, and transportation for $30.
Well, so, if you're lucky enough to go to Costa Rica, I think that's great advice. But I see your point, though, because some of the wetsuits that you have to wear are the super thick ones, right?
Yeah, definitely thick suits, but technology's come a long way. When I was 15 years old, I felt like I was Gumby in my suit, and I could last maybe like 30 minutes and 45 minutes out there on the coldest winter day. But today, the companies really realize, you know, cold water surfing is where it needs to be. And there's a lot of cold water places. And like Vic said, there's pros coming to these cold water places. So, you know, because of that, the companies need to make good suits for the pros at the same time. So technology has gone a long way where a suit is very Gumby and very flexible now. And you can stay in the water for up to almost 2 hours and stuff. But it all comes down to, if you're paddling a lot, you're going to be warm. But if you sit there and wait for that wave to try to come to you, then you're going to get cold pretty quick.
Okay, Martin, thanks for your call. And some simple basics, if people don't have not ever used a wetsuit, on how a wetsuit works. The reason it's called a wetsuit and not a dry suit is that the water comes in and makes a layer between your skin and the wetsuit. And so your body heat warms it up eventually, but right. not right away.
Yeah, not right exactly. away. And, after you wipe out, some of the water will pour into your wetsuit, and it takes out all the warm water. Then you have to re-warm up that cold water. So you can be a little chilly when you wipe out sometimes.
So how much – you were 10 years old, so Owen, that doesn't take as much courage. But how much courage does it have the first time, and what do you tell your beginners?
Ah, oh, geez. If they're in the shop looking to do it, you don't have to tell them anything. They're ready. So yeah, they're excited and ready to go. You just, you know, basically you just have a much shorter session. Like the guy hit on earlier, a warm place, you could spend a lot of hours in the water, as opposed to if you're surfing in the winter, you might get an hour, 2 hours, you know, until you're too cold or whatever. And you know, it's like anything. You don't get good at playing a guitar by just having it sitting on your lap. You got to do it, you know, and you don't get better at surfing just sitting on the board out there. You got to paddle and try to stand up.
You could look good, though.
You could look good. Yeah. Yep. Everybody's a surfer.
A surfer? We'll go to Marcus calling from Wells. Hi, Marcus. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say what incredible guests you have. Vic taught me to surf when I was – well, he didn't teach me to surf, but I bought a board from him when I was like 9, and he told me all the rules and stuff. I got my first fun shape from him. It was a 6'2". Shout out Wheels and Waves. You just said you guys have great guests. Owen, keep writing. That was awesome. I'm an English teacher, so
thanks.
Respect that. Keep ripping as well. And Charlie, shout out from the High Roller Lobster Company. You're awesome too. Main Surfers Union's awesome. So I just wanted to call and say. What awesome guests you have, and this has been an incredible show so far.
Well, Marcus, thanks for calling
in.
And Owen booked the guests, so shout out to Owen. We'll go to Katie, who's calling from Northeast Harbor. Hi, Katie. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to call. I'm not a surfer, but about 10 or 15 years ago, I was driving by Otter Creek, and I saw, and it was winter. I don't know if it was late November or December, the other side, but I saw some surfers, which I couldn't believe, and got out and started watching them. And on their side, there were two surfers, I think, and then there were these antlers, and there was a deer that was surfing right alongside of them. And I just wondered if any of your guests had that happen to them. I've never heard of
that. No. There was a moose out in the lineup, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago down in York, and there was actually one out in the lineup about 2-3 years ago. My friend Joe seen at a place I'm not going to mention. But anyway, I don't know. I think that's pretty rare.
What an experience, huh? Being out in the water and having a deer or a moose with you. I mean, wow. That's amazing. Katie, thanks for calling and sharing that experience. What about sharks? You guys seen sharks?
Not in Maine.
Yeah.
No. The
water's warming up.
It is warming up, but like we have our water comes from pretty much Labrador and rotates north to south. So the Gulf Stream's so far offshore, you see a lot more sharks further offshore where that cold, warm water kind of meets each other right there. My uncle's a big tuna fisherman and lobsterman, and they'll see them like when they're offshore, like fishing for those and stuff. But in here, you don't really see them. And every summer, they're like, was it down in like Biddeford and stuff? They'll do like a shark scare. They'll say like, oh, there's a great white coming in. And usually it's a bassing shark. A lot of bassing sharks look like great white sharks or sunfish. People freak out. They see that big fin on a sunfish and think it's a shark. But we don't really have any sharks close to shore to us. They're just mostly sand sharks.
Yeah, we have a policy at our store. If you get attacked by a shark, your rental's free.
I might have to do that one.
Okay, if you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we take a quick break, a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to discuss the role that factories have played in shaping our state and our world. We have an historian who's written a whole book about factories. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back. King of the beach. King of the beach.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
EPA Chief Scott Pruitt is preparing to testify before Congress, and lawmakers have a lot they could ask about.
For flying first class at taxpayers' expense.
Of these raises given to two of his political aides.
Rolling back vehicle emission standards and clean power plants.
Regarding a condo he rented from the wife of a top energy lobbyist.
A review of Pruitt's controversies and policies. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30. Here on Maine Public Radio. We hope you'll stay with us after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock for City Arts and Lectures. On today's show, Regina McCarthy, former public servant for more than 30 years, who served in both Democratic and Republican administrations, most recently as Environmental Protection Agency Administrator under President Obama. That's coming up in about 20 minutes on City Arts and Lectures at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Surfing in Maine. Joining me, Owen Manahan, a senior at Kennebunk High School and a surfer since he was 10. Charlie Fox, owner of the Maine Surf Shop, Maine Surfers Union. Vic Brazen has been the owner of Wheels and Waves, Maine's oldest surf shop, for 18 years. He's a longtime surfer, snowboarder, and skateboard photographer. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Constance sent us an email. She wants to know, what is your dream surf experience? She also wants us to post Owen's poem, so we'll see if he'll let us do that after the program. Dream surf experience, Charlie?
Dream surf, that's a loaded question.
That is.
You know, probably a private island somewhere with a perfect right point that just wraps all the way around the island the whole time with me and a couple of close friends and a case of beer.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost every day. It's like, you know, it's we probably all have gotten to travel to great locations, and you know, I don't know if there is just one great place. It's just you know, a good wave where it's not too crowded. And yeah, I think we all like the warm water, too.
To add on to that, what's amazing about the East Coast especially, maybe a little bit less on the West Coast and some of these islands that have really nice coral reefs or just even beaches that will funnel in similar waves, there's never the same wave twice, in especially Maine. And I think that's interesting. And every day is fun just because it's different. But if we were to have a perfect wave and the perfect surf experience, it would just be an island with some type of crazy swell that keeps a wave going forever around it, and you can just keep on. You can hop on. You're there with a few friends.
And, there's days in Maine that are absolutely perfect. No place I'd rather be.
Yeah, I've surfed. I lived in California for 8 years, and it was fun. And I surfed a lot of waves up and down the whole entire coast, and surfed a lot of places around the U.S. and stuff. But Maine's definitely one place where I definitely enjoy the most, just because I really like the challenge of the surfing. You know, really you have to put in time of where to go and what to do. And Vic tapped on it, Owen talked on it too. It's like it's challenging. You know, the surf out there is like you really progress your surfing. If you can surf good in Maine, you can pretty much almost surf anywhere else in the U.S. just because how challenging our waves are.
We'll go to Laura calling from Cape Natick. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Hey, Laura.
Hey, Vic, how's it going? Good. Just calling in. I'm loving today's show, and I'm loving all the kind of old-timers calling in and sharing their stories to you. I just wanted to just say that something that I've been surfing in Maine since I was a kid, but more seriously for maybe 20, 25 years, and I'm loving seeing all the women in the water, because 20 years ago, you were not seeing hardly any women out there. And
I'm loving the popularity of women surfing popping up. So just shout out to all the, you know, younger women getting after it and getting out there. And if there's any women listening, definitely, you know, be intimidated by all the guys in the water. Maybe get a friend, go to a shop, go to a ladies' night, and, you know, get out there. So,
so Laura, what do you think the difference is? Do you think it's a change in the surf culture, or is it because the wetsuits are better, or a little of both?
Definitely because the wetsuits are better. And, you know, when I started winter surfing, I used to travel when I was younger before I had kids in the winter. So I really started taking on winter surfing. The wetsuits were not made for women. So you're trying to fit in a guy's suit. And, you know, so now they have some great women's suits. And definitely the culture has shifted too. Starting out, you know, I'd be going for a wave and I'd have older guys say, oh, I don't take you seriously when you're going for the wave, you know, as they dropped in on me. And, but that shifted with so many more women in the water and, you know, and it really is at its core, you know, very tribal thing, surfing. So, like, I love what's been talked about on the show. Like, if you see beginners in the water, other people that might not be in the know, just that's how we all learn. You know, I learned from, I remember one time I dropped in on a local guy at my break, and I was riding in front of him thinking it was great, and he picked me up by the waist and threw me off the back of the wave.
So these guys were recommending people be nice and gentle. Vic, you wanted to say something to Laura?
Yeah. Well, what's up, Laura? How we doing? But really, I wanted to, when she touched upon the women, I got to give a shout out to Maddie Ryan from Moody Beach. She's ripping. She rides big waves. She's getting some national exposure, and she's probably going to be the first real deal pro from Maine. So shout out for Maddie. She's the real deal.
Great. Well, Laura, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to move on to Brian, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have surfed a little bit in Costa Rica, just rental boards. And I live in Maine, though, and I would like to get started going out there. And how much is it going to run me about to get a wetsuit and a board? And what else?
It all varies on, you know, the way we size people on boards. We just ask for a person's height, weight. If you're going to be a fair weather surfer, you're going to try to go all year long, stuff like that. You know, wetsuits vary in prices depending on how good of a suit you want to get. They can go anywhere from $200 up to $400. And then boards, you know, if you're a, say, 6 foot tall person weighing 180 to 190 or pushing 200, then you're going to be looking at a 9 foot board. And those, again, vary in prices too. You're going to be looking at anything from anywhere used, maybe in the $500 to $700 range, and then new you can get into the $1,000 range with them too. But, you know, we try to tell people at our shop, we tell people it's like, you know, more time you use it, it's going to pay off very quickly. So it's an upfront cost, and it's expensive to get in right away upfrontly. But, you know, more times you get out of water, more time you're using it, it's paying off a lot quicker versus if you go skiing or snowboarding. Every time you go skiing each year, you got to need new gear, you got to get everything tuned, and then you're putting $100 away, going up to lunch, dinner, all this stuff.
No lift tickets.
The ocean's free.
Yeah, waves are free.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a great thing. It's like there is an upfront cost into it, but, you know, it'll pay off more times you go.
Okay, there you go, Brian. We've got Joe calling from down East Maine. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling up with a suggestion, I guess, for beginning surfers or people who might be interested in learning to surf. I don't think it's been touched on. I think that anybody of average athletic ability can learn to ride a surfboard. The difficulty lies with learning to catch waves, and there's absolutely no substitute for putting in hours and hours and hours. It takes most people a long time. I mean, people can catch easy whitewater waves pretty quickly, but the mental calculations that go into it, that only comes with being in the water for a long, long time, and so it can be discouraging. So I'm just throwing it out there that if people are trying to surf and they're experiencing some of that discouragement, that they just need to hang in there and put in the time, because all of a sudden there'll be a huge payoff.
Joe, thanks for your call. I imagine a lot of people are kind of self-conscious, too, about falling again and again and again.
A bit, yeah. To speak to what Joe was saying, there's an absolute art of what's called being in the right spot. And there's a point when it depends on the spot, it depends on the day, it depends on the wave. But the wave breaks, and you ideally want to catch it kind of right as it's breaking, and then get down the line and go down the face. And every wave is a little different. They might come in at different angles, and there's definitely a huge art to being in the right spot and getting a lot of waves, because you can certainly sit out there for an hour and a half and only catch one or two.
We'll go to Paul, who's calling from Pittsfield. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great show, and I wanted to just say I'm not a surfer, but I've tried a couple of times, once in 1971, and I took a keg through my cheek and kind of had to lay off for a while. And then another time I went out on the swell from Hurricane Edward a few years back down at Scarborough Beach State Park and got wrecked real good.
Did you say got rooked, R-O-O-K-E-D?
No,
worked.
It works, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where I was. I didn't get up.
Oh.
I kissed the board, the tail. Literally crawled out on my hands and knees, dragging the board by the leash.
Well, don't give up.
Yeah, don't give up.
Well, the first one, like I said, was 1971 in West Palm, and then this time was here in Scarborough Beach State Park. But the upshot of it was, after that and recovery, leaving the park at Scarborough, I found out I was locked in the parking lot and couldn't get out.
It happens sometimes.
I'm not a resident there, and they locked the parking lot, and I didn't know that, and I didn't have a code number. But some good Samaritan did let me out, which wouldn't have been the worst fate to stay overnight there. But
you're going to try again, right?
I'm going to try again. I'm only 70, so
plenty of time left.
Yeah.
I just turned 70, and I guess lessons might be a good idea. So.
Yeah, lessons and then not going out in hurricanes.
Yep.
That's a big thing. We call hurricanes kind of cleanup season.
Yeah.
Because it's like everybody who learned how to surf in the summertime, or they're like, I'm going to go out when the waves are big, you will see it's kind of cleanup season when people start getting pulled out of the water, or they go out and they don't understand that the waves are big and strong. You want to go out when the waves are smaller, more at your ability, and be safe with it.
Yeah, know your limits.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Paul, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to go to Sophia calling from Augusta. Hi, Sophia. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I'm actually down in Portland. But I just wanted to share with listeners, and in case any of you weren't aware of the surf research that has been conducted in southern Maine and New Hampshire, I was a master's student on the New England Sustainability Consortium Safe Beaches and Shellfish Project, and I interviewed and surveyed surfers in southern Maine on New Hampshire on their perceptions of water quality and risk. And we actually, my advisor, Dr. Shannon Rogers, who was at Plymouth State and is now at the University of New England, published a paper on that research as well. But there's tons of information out there that isn't some academic paper. We have a white paper and just a one-handed fact sheet, and all that's available online. You can easily Google surf science in Maine, and also try and post that to your Facebook
page. Yeah, that'd be great. That's what I was going to recommend, Sophia. If you can go to today's post and post that in the comments, that would be terrific. Thank you so much. We have an email from Becca. I've been surfing for over half my life, at least at 50 now, and have surfed Maine and New Hampshire primarily. I wanted to send a big shout out about Grain surfboards down in York, Maine. You can build your own board, which I highly recommend, or buy one they make. They are highly ecological, being made of almost entirely cedar, and incredibly beautiful and snappy. And then we have an email from Allison. My husband is a local artist. He draws under the name Steve-O, and he will be having an art show at Maine Surfers Union in June. He always says how wonderfully welcoming the surf community has been about his artwork. I'm wondering if your guests can talk about this camaraderie among surfers, who we have always found to be the most welcoming, wonderful crowd.
I think surfers generally are creative people, so they click with artists all the time, mm-hmm. and we like have our boards look cool. And, I mean, you sell skateboards because of the artwork on the bottom primarily. Yeah. Kids walk in. Most skateboards, to the average kid who isn't very good at skateboarding, they're all going to ride pretty close. They buy them because of the picture on the bottom. Art in skateboarding, art in surfing, it's been going together. I mean, all the way back to, you know,
the early 60s.
Jeff Pauley.
Yeah. It's expression. It's expression of ourselves. You know, a lot of us, like, you know, a lot of people want to express themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there's talented artists out there that like to design and paint on the boards and do stuff. And it makes it unique and different. You got your one-off kind of style thing. And, you know, everybody camaraderie coming together because they all want to work together and help each other succeed and each other grow.
Yeah, there's a lot of expression, you know, even from intermediate to the absolute best surfers. Everyone has their different style. And you think of some of the pro surfers, and each of them surfs differently, does different maneuvers, and it's cool.
We're going to try to squeeze in one more call. Chris, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, guys, how you doing?
How's it going?
Good. So I actually had a quick question. It's probably to both of the demographics in the room, the consumer and the retailer. Surfing's a sport that embraces kind of the outdoor elements and the purity of the ocean and things like that. One thing that has been hard over the generations is to embrace a really, really green approach to products and then also kind of the delivery of products to retailers. And so, Owen, as a high schooler who's kind of budding into adulthood, how can you kind of commit to a green consumer choice process? And then Charlie and Vic, on the retail end, how often does that come up in the shop? And are you able to adequately educate people who have an interest in buying green?
Chris, thanks for your question. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to let these guys have a chance to answer.
So the big thing is, there's definitely green products and green boards out there, and people are producing them. It's really expensive. The materials haven't really got there yet. We shape a lot of our own boards at our shop. We use a thing called entropy resin, the same stuff the guys at Grain use. It's a bio-based type of resin that's environmentally friendly. But there's stuff guys out there doing. They're doing algae foam and recycled blanks, and Marco Foam's doing some really good stuff. We're like taking waste EPS foam and grinding up and making it blanks. They're getting there. It's just it's not there yet due to the cost of it and due to the masses haven't really all jumped on board with it yet.
All right. Well, it does sound like it's where the sport is going.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for being here. That's going to be our last question of the hour. You just heard from Charlie Fox, the owner of Maine Surfers Union. Vic Brazen's also here, the owner of Wheels and Waves. And Owen Manahan, high school student in Kennebunk, who helped produce today's show. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our archives at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the history and impact of factories. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.